This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 1st, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 358. Happy Labor Day and thank you to workers everywhere. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, the Free Enterprise feud is over. Kevin Falcon withdrew BC United from the October 19th provincial election in order to support John Rastad and the Conservative Party of BC against David Eby and his NDP government. Mario Canseco of Research Co. joins me to make sense of a day in BC political history. And Labor Day weekend is the unofficial end of summer. It's back to school and for many back to the office. Public transit utility TransLink is threatening to cut services around the Lower Mainland if the next provincial government doesn't give it hundreds of millions of dollars. Meanwhile, SkyTrain construction projects are late and billions of dollars over budget. Malcolm Johnston of Rail for the Valley is my guest. He says TransLink is costing too much and it needs an audit and a shakeup. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. August 28th, 2024, a day in British Columbia political history. The Free Enterprise feud is over. BC United leader Kevin Falcon withdrew his party from the October 19th provincial election and threw his support behind John Rastad and the Conservative Party of BC in a bid to defeat David Eby and the NDP. Here's Kevin Falcon speaking at the Wall Centre in Vancouver.
Whether staff, whether caucus colleagues, whether candidates, whether supporters, I want them all to know that I have a line of sight into a whole range of areas that impact what kind of campaign we can run. And I can look them all in the eye and say to them, this is the right thing for us as a party, and it's the right thing for British Columbians.
John Rastad.
Frankly, I'm so thrilled and pleased that we're able to bring this together, even though I know it's very tough on a lot of people. But by doing this, we are going to have the best opportunity possible to bring an end to these radical policies, to the destruction that's happening in British Columbia, and to make sure that people can be positive about building a good future.
Joining me on the podcast is Mario Canseco, president of Research Co.
What is your reaction to this announcement?
Well, it definitely caught everybody off guard, I think. You know, we're just coming off a week in which the BC United Party held its traditional Beans and Jeans fundraiser. The announcement comes less than 24 hours after BC United presents its Forestry platform, and at a time when they were desperately trying to get the attention of voters to what they were talking about. There's still a lot of complexity on where this will go, of course, because apparently we're going to be heading into a situation with discussions about what happens in each riding and which candidate is the best position to run. Which ironically is what they could have done in December and you know, probably establish a more united front that would have campaigned against the NDP with a larger runway. But this is the situation where we are right now, partly because of the collapse of BC United. At one point, polling closer to 40%. And then the last time we asked in July, in single digits, at just 9%.
We'll see if any BC United members stand up and contest this in any way. But as I understand it, this was negotiated with Kevin Falcon and approved by the board of BC United. Do you think that there could be a surprise along the way? Anyone might try to contest this, say, in the courts even?
I think there's a possibility of that. You know, part of what makes this hard to fathom for the candidates who decided to run is you're stuck in a situation that is not the one that you signed up for. If you're a BC Conservative who has been there from the start, you're not one of those star candidates that came in late into the game. Are you going to be asked to vacate your seat or your possibility of being on the ballot because BC United has somebody who's better positioned than you are? So I think it can hurt them both ways. I mean, certainly not Kevin Falcon, because he's not going to be leading a party after the election. But it could lead to significant problems for John Rastad when he has to counter people who chose to run under him when they were at a significantly lower level in the polls. and are now being told to step aside because the candidate from BC United is seen as better positioned to win. So it's not as if we're going to have a situation that ends quietly for either of the parties, especially if you have an incumbent who essentially says, I know the doors, I think I'm better positioned to do this. And the BC Conservative candidate in the same riding says, well, I've been knocking on the same doors and people don't like you. So it's not going to be an easy marriage in that sense.
What does this mean for the NDP? The NDP that back in January was looking forward to perhaps an even bigger majority, but now they have an adversary in the BC Conservatives who will be uniting the right and fighting them in the October 19th election for the NDP. Could this mean defeat?
I think it makes things significantly more complicated. You know, the wish was for the split to be perfect, to have an even number of people voting for either the BC United Party or the BC Conservatives, enabling victories in ridings where the NDP hasn't done well before. I think that was definitely the case in southern British Columbia. If you look at the numbers, you could have the BC Conservatives eating into the share of the vote of people who are running again, like Todd Stone or Peter Milovar, and then the NDP can win that riding with 33, 34% of the vote. I think that was part of the calculation for having the two parties running together. Now that that is no longer the case, it becomes more about how do the forces coalesce behind the center-right alternative, which is the Conservatives now, in an election that is not being fought during the pandemic. In 2020, the NDP did very well in the Fraser Valley. They won some seats in other parts of the province where they didn't do well in 2017 because of Horgan's pandemic management. And now we have a different leader of the NDP in David Eby, in a situation where you could have those groups essentially coming back into the fold because the BC Conservatives have emerged as that option. So definitely the campaign is going to be more complicated for the NDP now, even if they hold on to all of the seats in Metro Vancouver and run a significantly more Metro Vancouver-based campaign. There's no guarantee that that is going to be enough to propel them to victory.
And only time will tell, and we're looking at the calendar. September 21st is when the election writ is expected. The date of the election is etched in stone, October 19th, and look forward to having you back on the podcast as we get closer to that day. Thanks again to Mario Canseco of Research Co.
Thank you, Bob.
Labor Day weekend is the unofficial end of summer, right before the official back to school. For many, it's also back to the office. And for those that don't drive, they rely on TransLink, the public transportation utility for the Lower Mainland. TransLink is also spending on a pre-election advertising campaign. It's threatening service cuts if Victoria doesn't come to the rescue with hundreds of millions of dollars. It's threatening service cuts in communities big and small around the Lower Mainland. Someone I thought would be a good person to ask about this to get through the clutter is Malcolm Johnston. He's a TransLink critic in Tawasin. He's with a group called Rail for the Valley. He's been watching TransLink for much of its history and then some. Tell me about a bit about your history of being a watchdog for this ever-increasing transportation, public transportation bureaucracy, and all the major multi-billion dollar mega projects that it benefits from.
Well, it all started with a letter to the editor in the Vancouver Sun, really shredding the idea of installing the Expo 86 monorail in the West End. The politicians were on this bandwagon and they were using this term, oh, the Germans are building monorails everywhere. Well, there's only one monorail in Germany. It's the Schwebebahn. It was built in 1903. They never built another one after that. So, in fact, today it's a historic monument. So when you start using facts against our transit development, it just carries on, because then we had SkyTrain and it carried on with that, because we're not being told the truth about this light metro system that we have. And unfortunately, our politicians are wedded to it, and they're wedded to these huge costs because of it. And we've gone so far now that we're really in a big transit deficit.
And SkyTrain is this technology that really made in Canada technology, and the only place in the world that really, really uses it is really Vancouver, with a couple of small exceptions.
Well, it's not Canadian technology. It's actually 1960s German technology that the Urban Transportation Development Corporation in Ontario bought. And it was first used on a monorail maglev that didn't work. And then they used the linear induction motors to operate a semi-conventional rail car, and no one wanted it. The system is basically unsaleable, and it has been for the last 50 years. Yeah. Only Vancouver continues building with it. There's only six left in operation, and it has such a jaded history that I'm shocked that we keep still building with it.
BC taxpayers whose money has gone into this have helped keep SNC-Lavalin alive. SNC-Lavalin, through all its corrupt history, has tried to turn the page, has rebranded itself, renamed itself as AtkinsRéalis, and they were actually given a contract by the NDP government, among other companies, to work on the Surrey-Langley SkyTrain project, which, of course, surprise, surprise, is behind schedule and over budget. It was supposed to cost $4 billion. Now it's going to cost $6 billion. What do you think of this project, which should have been an LRT line way back when, except Mayor Doug McCallum of Surrey changed the NDP's mind and said, no, forget the LRT, let's go with SkyTrain?
I don't think McCallum changed the NDP's mind. I think Trudeau changed the NDP's mind, because SkyTrain's all about jobs in Quebec and Ontario. That's all it is. The system is dated, it's old, it's hugely expensive to build, it's very expensive to operate, even though it's driverless. Driverless transit systems are very expensive. The whole concept of light metro, which SkyTrain is an inner city people mover, something that is cheap, that can move large amounts of people cheaper than a subway when you build it elevated. So it's a bit of an oxymoron that it's actually built in a subway under Broadway. It's not a regional railway. It's going to be a very expensive proposition to operate to Langley. It's the wrong system. That's why Surrey, as well as Langley originally said, look, we need rail transit. Well, TransLink said, yeah, well, okay, we'll build you light rail. But I think there was pressure from Ottawa, because they've always pressured transit authorities in Canada to build with a SkyTrain-like system. And what people don't really, it hasn't been let known that SkyTrain, the system that's used on the Expo Millennium lines, has had four owners. It's a proprietary railway. It's had four owners. One of those owners was Lavalin. Now, Lavalin went bankrupt trying to build one in Bangkok, and then later SNC-Lavalin amalgamated with Lavalin, become SNC-Lavalin, and they acquired with that the engineering patents. So now, if you want to build it at any type of cost saving, you have to include SNC-Lavalin. They have engineering patents. Now, the system is now owned by Alstom, and all of Bombardier's patents for the second generation cars are now owned by Alstom. But we don't know about the engineering patents. So I think SNC has to be included in any SkyTrain construction. That's just the way it is. And unfortunately, that people don't realize that. The media doesn't realize that. To them, transit is a motherhood and apple pie proposition. You don't say anything bad about it because public transit's good. Well, this thing's costing us huge sums of money. And I mean, Mayor McCallum, who was, Surrey's version of Trump, said, oh, we can build this. I'm an expert. We can build this for $1.63 billion. Well, TransLink came back, said, no, it was really 3.1. Well, you start talking to experts outside of the Metro Vancouver bubble, and they said, look, 4 to 5 billion. Now it's gone up to 6 billion. And if you include the operations and maintenance center number 5, it's going to be 7 billion. It is a transit system that keeps on taking the taxpayers' money and offering nothing. Because according to TransLink, this system, this extension to Langley, is going to carry fewer passengers than the Broadway B line bus.
And that Operations Maintenance Center 5 that you just mentioned, that is going to be built on agricultural land reserve land that the BC NDP cabinet quietly changed the designation of by a cabinet order last December. Looks like it's going to be $1 billion. Looks like it's going to be added to the cost. I've asked the Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure straight up, and they haven't given me an answer. They haven't told me that you're wrong. Not only is SNC liable and under its new name, Atkins Realis, building on the Surrey-Langley SkyTrain line, but you also got another company from Spain, Acciona. And that name is well known to people, especially in the North Shore, because that was the original builder of the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant, which should have been $700 million, but looks like it's going to be more than $4 billion by the time it's over. They were fired by Metro Vancouver. Now they're in litigation. They're suing each other. And yet the NDP government has given Acciona more work to do, even though it hasn't finished the Broadway subway. That's delayed to 2027. We don't have an updated budget for that. We're almost in election season. Maybe we'll never know what the actual cost will be until afterwards. What do you think needs to be done? Do you think we need to get a new Auditor General here in BC who will dig into this and get the truth for the public?
Well, BC's Auditor General has a very bad history with SkyTrain. To really get down to the core of it, we have to go outside of Canada. We have to go to like the British National Audit Office, somebody outside of Canada that has a working knowledge of railways, because Canada is basically a small country and our auditor generals tend to be tainted. Now, the federal auditor general is not, I would say it's bad, but really we have to get outside of Canada. We need somebody to say, this is the problem and this is it. And there it is. And they're not tainted by the local politics. And unfortunately, this is not going to happen. And the NDP, I mean, as I said, the NDP love these fast ferry projects. SkyTrain is being built on a route that you do not build a light metro on. And they're going to suffer massive financial issues with it. And it's going to continue happening because automatic railways are very expensive to operate. And when there's not that much ridership, you're paying an awful lot of maintenance money for no gain. And it really is. You have to ask yourself the question. This system has been on the market for 50 years and no one wants it. Not one of these systems have sold in 20 years. Only 7 were built. Only 6 are left in operation. And one that's still in operation went to Toronto's garage sale and bought all the spare parts they could. And that was Detroit to keep their little system running. So basically, it's just Vancouver's the only country now expanding the system or planning to expand the system in the future. And here's another problem. It is a proprietary railway. Unlike the Canada line, which is just a railway, it's a heavy rail metro built as a light metro. But the Expo Millennium lines are powered by linear induction motors. They're a proprietary railway, and there's only one supplier for cars, and that's Alstom. And I can tell you, when the last paid for orders are done, they're gonna cease production. Now, this means that if you're going to get new cars, that means you're gonna have to have them custom built, and that just raises the cost. And I go back to the German Schwebebahn, the monorail in Germany, when they had to completely rebuild their system, they had to go out and pay large sums of money to have custom built cars to operate on it. And this is gonna happen to us. And we go back to, again, to the operations and maintenance center number 5. They need it because SkyTrain's now operating these 5-car trains. Now these cars have open vestibules, they have through communication, and they you can't sort of uncouple them and do a little bit of maintenance. Every 5-car set has to be maintained as one sort of set. And we just don't have the space to do it. So they need this new operations and maintenance center for these cars. And it's just SkyTrain's just this system that keeps on costing us. TransLink has never been honest with the public with it. They hired a spin doctor as CEO from Baltimore. And when I sent an email off to Baltimore, because you're to the engineering department, because that's where you ask how CEOs work. You don't ask the bureaucracy, you ask the guys actually have to deal with it. And I got back an email saying we have good news, we have bad news. Good news is we're rid of him. Well, that story is bad. I mean, so what's going on? The public have no say. The public have been kept out of the loop of planning, and TransLink's literally out of control, planning this, planning that, but they don't even know where the people are going, what the people want. And really, it's just going to be more and more costly. And the other foot's going to, the other shoe's going to drop, because if Poilievre wins, he's cutting all this transit funding. So that's going to leave Metro Vancouver with a very expensive transit system, hugely expensive. And either you just stop operating it and say, well, that's too bad, the feds won't pay, or you start taxing people more. And I can tell you, as a pensioner, I'm taxed out. I can't afford anymore. You know, and I think this is the next election in BC is going to be people taxed out and voting against any more of this infrastructure until the public actually been told the truth, the facts, and not what the story, what the government wants us to hear, but the actual facts, the actual truth. And until that happens, our transit system, TransLink's going to, every year is going to come back, well, we need more money, and they're going to bring out the, you know, the fiddle and you know, the old crying towel and want more and more. And it's just, you just can't keep feeding this. It's insatiable. You just can't keep feeding the money, because they're not spending it on good transit. They're just doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. And, you know, that's a sign of absolute madness. And that's our transit system.
Yeah, TransLink under CEO Kevin Quinn, who was imported from Baltimore, is being asked by the NDP to basically to do two things, to be the public transit agency, but also a real estate agency. The NDP, in its zeal to try to solve the affordable housing crisis, is now mandating skyscrapers, condo towers around transit stations, whether they be SkyTrain stations or bus loops. It wants TransLink to be a part of that. Also at a time when, as you say, people are being taxed out of the market, people are being asked to pay more and more and more, and they don't know where their money is going. At the same time, you have a change in the market that people aren't driving gas-powered vehicles as much as they used to, and our governments are telling us they want to change everything from gas power to electric power. Well, what happens to the gas tax revenue? So where are they going? Where are they driving us? And what do you think the solution would be and should be on a long-term basis to keep people moving affordably in this growing metro area?
Well, the problem is TransLink follows the hub and spoke transit philosophy, where you take a bus to transit hubs and you get on the SkyTrain and you go on SkyTrain and you get off and get on another bus. It doesn't work anymore. So you're building massive complexes and residential sites around transit hubs like Metrotown. But if that transit's not going where you want to go, you got to use a car. And as the rents and leases increase because of the NDP's densification, which is increasing property values, stores are closing out and they're moving up the valley where there's precious little transit. So the only way to get around to work or to shop, you need a car, because transit's not doing it. And they can't see this, and they just they quote, oh, it can carry X amount of people and it can do this and that. The trouble is with transit, it has to be user friendly for people to use. And if transit isn't going where you want to go, you're not going to use it. And this is what's happening in Metro Vancouver. This is why we have endemic congestion now on the number one highway, because people are working and living up the valley and commuting crossways, and there's no transit. And the politicians, especially the NDP, utterly refuse to admit they've made a mistake. They've just absolutely refused to. And so they keep on doing, again, the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. Well, that was the fast ferry fiasco, you know, 30 years ago. The ferries were designed for an Iona Island, Gabriola Island, quick trip. That fizzled. So then they tried to retrofit these ferries to operate on, you know, Schwartz Bay to Tawasin and you know, Nanaimo to Horseshoe Bay. they didn't work. It didn't work well. It just wasn't, they weren't designed for that. We have a rapid transit system designed for inner city use, and then now they're trying to use it as a regional railway, and it's going to fail badly. And there's another little issue too that no one's dealt with. There's almost a universal law that people won't ride transit for more than an hour to their destination. Well, Langley's just outside that hour travel list. And when people are on transit for more than an hour, they go to the car. It's simple as that. And that's what's happening in the Lower Mainland too. And these are things that TransLink should be doing, should be looking at, should take into account, and they're not. They're just saying, you know, there's your transit. You must use it. And it's like a Monty Python skit gone wrong. You know, it's just, it's wrong. It's all wrong what we're doing. And no one, you know, I think the Emperor's New Clothes, I think that fable fits. Everybody's afraid to tell EB that we're doing it wrong and we have to change. And basically our transit is naked because it's not working. It's certainly not working. I don't know what to do, because when you have a government that just refuses to listen to anything but their own wants and what they want to do, you just throw up your hands and just shake your head, because there's nothing you can do. And with the NDP, they don't want to listen. They don't want to know. And that means we're going to be paying a lot more taxes to fund more blunders by the NDP. And I don't want to keep pointing at the NDP, but they're wedded to the SkyTrain system like a tar baby. The Liberals, we have our own bag of worms with the Canada line, but it's a conventional railway. There's easier solutions for that to mitigate those problems. With SkyTrain, we cannot. It's a proprietary railway. And until the Premier, somebody goes up to the Premier and say, look, we're doing it wrong. Go out there and admit we're doing it wrong. And then let's do something that will work. But he won't do it. He won't do it. And that's a failing of most politicians today. They will not admit that they've been doing it wrong. And they do, as long as they can tax the public more, they keep on doing it wrong. Simple as that.
The one thing that citizens can do on the road to October 19th is demand answers from the politicians. How much are we really spending? Why is it costing so much to build these transit lines, these SkyTrain extensions? And what about the future of TransLink? Should it be reformed, broken up? Should there be a full forensic audit? Those are questions for the public to ask their politicians before they go to the voting booths on October 19th. Thanks again for joining me on the podcast, Malcolm Johnston, TransLink critic. He's with Rail for the Valley.
Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, U.S. and Chinese diplomats held secret meetings on Taiwan. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi met in Vienna, Malta, and Bangkok. The, quote, strategic channel was established at a time when U.S.-China relations had reached their lowest point with, quote, all the issues stacked against the backdrop of the most sensitive topic in U.S.-China relations, Taiwan, end quote. In ABC News Australia, federal government secures 22 million IV fluid bags amid global shortage. Federal Health Minister Mark Butler says the government has secured more IV fluids than forecast demand. Higher than expected demand and manufacturing constraints have fueled the global supply shortage. American multinational Baxter produces about 75% of the IV fluids Australia uses. In Kyoto news, reactor in central Japan fails to pass post-Fukushima safety review. Japan's nuclear watchdog on Wednesday decided that a Japan Atomic Power Company reactor in Fukui Prefecture failed to pass its restart safety review, marking the first such case since the regulatory body's founding after the 2011 Fukushima earthquake and tsunami-triggered nuclear crisis. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland's winter will differ from rest of Oregon, Old Farmer's Almanac predicts. The very northern tip of Oregon, including Portland, will see a colder than normal winter, but most of the state will see a mild winter. The Pacific Northwest region will see its coldest spells in January and again in early March. Precipitation and snowfall will be above average in the north portion of the Pacific Northwest. In Crosscut, two Washington governor debates set for September, October date next. Democrat Bob Ferguson, the current state attorney general, and Republican Dave Reichert, a former congressman and King County sheriff, will face off in November's general election. They are scheduled to debate on September 10th and 18th. And in the Breaker.news, read stories such as a Vancouver city councillor who is critical of China's government met with CSIS, and logging contributed to Stanley Park railway derailment. Read the stories behind the headlines on the Breaker.news.
That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.news podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
reporter Mike McArdle. The New York native was a tabloid crime reporter who moved to BC and spent much of his career on BC TV and Global, and then CTV, telling the stories about everyday people. The retiring 80-year-old McArdle was saluted August 29th at the P&E Fair, and he signed off from CTV Vancouver on August 30th, after more than 60 years in the business. I'll miss him, and whenever you miss him, we can check out one of his 13 books from our local library. Thanks for your career, Mike. Thanks for telling the stories that matter to British Columbians.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.news podcast for the week of September 1st, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 1st of September in 1974, 50 years ago, the SR-71 Blackbird flew from New York to London in a record 1 hour, 54 minutes, and 56.4 seconds? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow the Breaker News as news happens on X, formerly known as Twitter. And you can support the Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.